Welcome to the Authentic Expert Podcast. We want to help you teach with heart, grow your business, and make an impact. Our mission is to introduce you to the best ideas, practices, case studies, and motivation so you can get dramatically better results with your online courses and your business. Thank you for joining us today. Now let's learn together.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for listening to the Authentic Expert Podcast. Today's guest is Dr. Kelly Edmonds of Wired Learning Designs. Kelly's an instructional designer, an e-learning specialist, and an educator, and she's incredibly passionate about building effective online courses that genuinely help people learn. Kelly's been designing online courses and training programs for universities and corporations for the past 15 years. And she recently expanded her business to include entrepreneurs and businesses, so she really brings a unique combination of experiences in the learning space. She's currently serving entrepreneurs through her flagship course design program called Your Great and Gorgeous eCourse. And at the end of this conversation, Kelly shares how you can use the power of a big idea to develop a compelling online course. So make sure to listen for that coaching from Kelly. And now, on to the interview. Just a quick reminder that today's episode is brought to you by Rizuku, the online course platform. Rizuku makes it ridiculously easy to create, sell, and teach your own online course. So if you're looking to create a course, go to startmyonlinecourse.com to get started for free. Again, that's startmyonlinecourse.com for a fun, easy, and free tool to create your very own online course. And we'll include two complimentary training courses to help you get started. First, 5 Steps to Your Online Course provides exercises to help you design and structure your course. And then Rizuku 101 will give you step-by-step guidance on the tech setup of your course. So take a moment to sign up at startmyonlinecourse.com and start unlocking the power of online courses for your business. Well, this is Abe Crystal from Rizuku, and I'm here with Kelly Edmonds. Kelly, thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, you're welcome.
And I got to know Kelly through her writing in the online sort of instructional design and course design space. And I just came across her expertise and point of view and thought it was really quite unique. And she was writing about online courses and programs in a different way than we typically see in the sort of online entrepreneur space. And I think the reason for that, as I'll ask her to share with you, is that she's actually a professional instructional designer who's created courses outside of the world of online entrepreneurial solopreneur courses with big corporations and universities where learning is taken very seriously and they use very powerful tools to design courses. So I thought it would be really interesting to talk about the intersection of those two worlds. So I'm excited to have Kelly with us today to begin that conversation. And Kelly, maybe to introduce listeners to kind of what you do and your point of view, I'd love to hear a little bit more about who you are, the kind of work that you do, and how you got into doing this work you do today, especially at the intersection of these different learning spaces.
Great. Yes, I'm an instructional designer. I'm also an educator, and I have a company called Wired Learning Designs. That's about four and a half years old now. And typically, I design courses, e-courses, or I conceptualize online programs for universities, colleges. I also work on e-training. Online training for the corporate world as well. And I decided this year to branch into the entrepreneurial world, and I just saw this amazing explosion of e-courses, and it warmed my heart because it's like, oh, this is great. Everyone is learning. I mean, as a teacher, we want people to learn and grow and change and get better and, you know, really improve their lives. And it's been an interesting transition because those are three different clients: academia, corporate, and entrepreneurs are three different type of clients and what they need for their business in terms of e-courses. So it's been a learning curve for me too this year, and really trying to focus my writings and my course. I have a course and I have a book on designing e-courses for the entrepreneur, you know, and what it is that they eventually will need for their students and their customers. And I realized I had to get right back to basics, because when a university contacts me to design a course or a whole program, a two-year program, we get right into the dialogue, right? That sort of academic instructional design dialogue. When the corporate world contacts me, they have different needs, but they want me to get right down to work and they want results, right? When the entrepreneurial world contacts me, they're still trying to understand the structure of courses and what's all involved. And there's a lot of moving parts in an online course. It's a complex production. Mm-hmm. So it's different when I work with them. And so it's really helped me inform me what it is I need to share in that world. And I work in all three worlds at once, and it's really quite interesting, right? But for me as an instructional designer, the only way I've been able to be successful at my productions is I stick with theory. I stick with the basic theory about how adults work, how the brain learns, how humans behave. I stick with that. And that has seen me through and through, you know, not get lost in these big productions. So what I'm trying to say is that there is a simplicity to it all. You're dealing with people in the end. And I know your background, Abe, and I love it. Human-computer interaction is a field I love exploring. So you're the same way too. It's like you're always dealing with this person staring at this computer screen, trying to get through a piece of learning. So yeah, that's been my business. I decided not to become a professor at a university, pretty well because, and you have your PhD too, the last year just about killed me. So I thought, this is not for me. I got a little closer to the inner chamber, wasn't pretty. So I thought, no, this is not what I want to do. And I'm so glad I went this route, because it's such a creative business. I really enjoy creating learning. I'm a teacher at heart, and I'm a technologist. So put all those together and I'm having a blast.
That's great. So the theme of our interviews is around being an authentic expert. I was wondering if you could share a little bit about what that means to you. What does authenticity mean to you in the context of your teaching and your business? And how do you practice authenticity in your business and in your teaching?
Great. Well, in the course that I teach right now, called Your Great and Gorgeous E-Course, I really show up, right? I really care about my learner's experience. I've designed it to just give them everything that I can share with them that's not overwhelming or too much, and really structured well and focused. But I'm there. I'm in the words. I'm in the delivery. I'm in the live webinars. I'm in the discussion board. And I also have a VIP package where I co-design their course with them before they sort of start the course. So when they take all the strategies, when they learn the strategies from me, they can really go deeper with their course. So I think that's really important. It comes across that I'm caring, and I also listen to what my learners need. So this course I have right now, this is the first time I delivered it. Today is the last day actually for it. I really wonder how big I'll get. I get the concept, like, oh, you know, you can get 100 people in there. And I get that. And yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And the way I deliver my content, it's very much standalone and interactive. So they could learn from it without ever really talking to me, right? But now I don't know if I want to do that. I think I'd rather take the learning journey with my students and be there when they have questions and be there when they hit blocks and encourage them and take a look at their work, because I do check homework too. I call it that too, you know, just to make it really authentic, like this is a learning experience. So I think, you know, showing up and listening to my students and answering their questions within their context. Like, I have a student right now from Norway, and I think there's a different culture over there. And I have a student down in Australia, and they're very direct people, right? The way they work. So I'm able to sort of listen to my students and sort of maybe tailor the teachings just a little bit toward them, or just respond in a different way to them. And my course is based on, my whole design philosophy is based on learner-centeredness. So my courses are based on, I teach to take care of your learners. And that informs everything, how the lessons are structured, you know, so how much the brain can take in. If it's a personal development course and you have to take care of the emotions, so this, and the context of the learner as well and their learning styles really informs the design of the rest. So, you know, one third of my course, maybe one quarter, I should say, is talking about, first off, your learners. And then the rest of it is all the sort of strategies and structures and technology and marketing and all that sort of stuff. And so I think that really makes it very authentic. So I think when people come to me and my clients, I take care of them, you know, and I've learned how to do that in a way because I've taught for 20 years. I've learned how to do that in a way so I don't get drained. But I also set up the learning so that there's always some sort of available piece of advice or accessible resource to help them build things, or the templates or the worksheets that I create can help them, right? Mm-hmm. So I think I am an authentic person, right? Anybody who knows me is, you see what you get. And it's been very hard for me, actually, I have to admit, getting into the entrepreneurial world and the marketing aspect. Mm-hmm. I really have constant problems with feeling sometimes yucky when I post stuff like, oh God, that's so sleazy, right? Mm-hmm. So really learning how to be authentic in the marketing aspect and being authentic in networks. And because I'm fine once I have my students and my clients, right? But just putting myself out there. So, you know, it's, I have battles with myself now and then going like, which direction do I want to go? How do I want to engage in this marketing world? And so that's probably the most inauthentic area of my life. And I'm trying to find a way to be authentic. But I'm hoping through my words, and they're sincere, and my blog posts are helpful, and my freebies are helpful. And I think just caring, I think, about my audience, my students, and my clients comes through in everything that I do.
So authenticity then for you is, it's really about caring and developing a relationship with the people in your courses and in your programs.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, that comes through the development of the course itself as well.
Mm-hmm. So you've had the opportunity to work on online courses and programs in a lot of different areas. I was wondering if you could take some time with us to reflect on those experiences across the different types of online courses that you've worked on. What are some of the things that you've learned over the years of working on online courses that might be useful to share with people who are trying to deepen their own perspective on creating effective online programs and to take their work in this area further?
You know, I have to say the one thing that I still struggle with is participation, mm-hmm. right? So in formal learning, in a university course or a college course, you have to participate, right? Well, that's the way it's structured. Mm-hmm. Like you get marks if you go on the discussion board and you post to something and then you respond to somebody else. It's forced participation, which is not always authentic, right? Mm-hmm. Then when you get into the informal world, like us, right, we provide courses people can take because they want to, but there's mm-hmm. there's no major assessment, there's no credit. Mm-hmm. How do you get them to participate? Because I really believe, I follow adult learning theory, which is adults are self-driven. Mm-hmm. Adults know their own needs. Adults don't like to be taught. Adults like to be taught, treated respectfully. Mm-hmm. So to put them into a childlike, school-like, you have to do this situation, they'll respond negatively, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But life gets busy, and participation sometimes is hard because you want to build some sort of a learning community. Right. Mm-hmm. But so I would say, like, if you have 100 students, or let's just say even 10 students, two or three will participate. So we're about a 30 to 40%. Those, there will be those that are really active. Mm-hmm. And then there will be 10% that will come in and out. Mm-hmm. And then there'll be some that are just, they'd rather work on their own, or they got too busy and they're falling behind. Or, you know, they are introverts or something like that. Actually, introverts love online discussion boards because then they don't have to talk, right? In class, I'm talking. So I think it's the concept of participation, but also at the same time, I know flexibility is a huge factor in courses. and not to go into online courses with expectations that everybody's going to do everything. They're going to show up when you say so. They're going to finish by Friday on whatever you hope they did that week. Mm-hmm. You have to be flexible and leave your courses open so that they can come in and finish. Mm-hmm. So it's that balance and in connecting and listening to your students and how they're experiencing your course. They may very well be enjoying it offline and you just don't know that, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas I had one course in my doctoral program on learning philosophies or just philosophies of life, and it was really, really complex course, and there was a discussion board, but so many of us thought, oh, I just don't get this, that we actually went on to live webinars and had our own little teachings and group support, and we do emails, and so we were really busy working on the course, but we mm-hmm. weren't actually on the discussion board in the course platform. Mm-hmm. And the instructor, the professor who I knew, said, where is everybody? And I said, you should see how hard we're working. So don't make the assumption, that's what I'm saying, that if they're not participating, that your course is awful or they aren't interested or they're not a good student. Everyone works differently, and that comes right down to the learning style, which is more than just people like visuals or people like auditory. It's like how they actually work and how they structure their time. So the real balance between participation and flexibility and the success of a course is always sort of this moving dynamic for me anyways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely hear that a lot from people that teach online. Do you have any thoughts as to how do you even assess participation and engagement in an online course, and what do you do if you feel like maybe it's not as high or as people aren't as engaged as you had hoped?
Well, I think, you know, there's some, I don't know with Rizuko, I think so. Can you track what pages people land on? Can you track student engagement that way? I can't remember.
Typically it's done through people marking activities as complete, so they can check off the learning activity as complete after they do it.
You know, things like that also work as well. And there's some other platforms that have, you know, tracking reports about what pages people are landing on and how long. That is one mm-hmm. indication that they're actually learning and listening. Mm-hmm. And one thing I'm going to do, I notice in my current course that I'm teaching, is my homework is probably, I have worksheets for them. And I didn't think about this because I just said, fill out this worksheet. And thinking the worksheet is really, in the end, the big piece they're going to fill out whenever they're going to finally write their content, be it November or, you know, next week. I needed to make smaller versions of those that are attainable, right? Mm-hmm. So just like put something up that's sort of the critical core of that particular worksheet and have them post that. Maybe it's, you know, a couple of paragraphs where that would be less daunting for them than to participate. Because I say to them, you know, post whatever you want post your homework in the discussion board and we'll all take a look, right? So I think I needed to pare that down a bit. So it's asking them, what is it we're asking of them, mm-hmm. right? And how attainable is that? Mm-hmm. And I think that would really help with participation as well. Because, you know, really in the end, you want to start a dialogue online. Some people are conversationalists, some people aren't. So, but there's people that get on there and they've got their own ideas. So setting up that space for them to be able to share without being overwhelmed could help as well.
Mm-hmm. So just bearing in mind that it's not enough simply to give people tools to apply your ideas and to take action, but it has to be scoped to something they can realistically get started with. So if we create some massive exercise or really complex worksheet that takes a ton of effort to work through, that may be too big as a first step to get people engaged. They may be intimidated.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I really preach, and one of the things I preach is bite-sized exercises. And I do have that in my content. Like mm-hmm. When they go through the content, there's little quizzes and stuff like, did you get this? Or why don't you try this out here? But my homework, I just realized, is I need to scale that back of what it is I would like them to, you know, try and share each week for feedback. Because feedback is huge. Mm-hmm. People want to know, am I getting this? Am I on the right track? How does this look? And that is the most, I think those are the best courses out there when there's feedback. And so I do that obviously through the VIP program package. I work one-on-one with them. I also do that with the live webinar. We have questions, actually not even questions. I always say, so what do you think about that idea? Mm-hmm. You know, so they get feedback then, and I get feedback, and also the homework online, plus the quizzes have automatic, they're marked with you know, a little feedback message mm-hmm. pops up, whether they're right or wrong. Mm-hmm. In the quizzes, I have feedback going, yeah, you're right. And then I just reinforce the concept. Mm-hmm. Or if they're wrong, you know, a gentle, not like you're wrong. It's like, well, you know, actually it sort of more works this way. This is a better way. So that's really, really important, because if people aren't engaging and doing something and then getting some feedback about if they're learning, right, or some sort of knowledge check, then they're just passively reading, right? So, but for it to get to the brain and the long-term memory and being able to apply it is really hard to do online, and even harder to do in a self-directed course, right? Mm-hmm. So one that's not facilitated.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's a nice bridge to what I wanted to ask you, which is, what can independent experts and entrepreneurs, authors, speakers, coaches, consultants, what can these type of experts learn from professional instructional designers? So it sounds like a couple of ideas so far are to focus on bite-sized pieces of content, so people can get that sense of, oh, this is one small thing that I can grasp and move forward, mm-hmm. and to provide feedback both through live teaching experiences on calls or webinars, or possibly through automated tools like quizzes. What else can content experts learn from professional instructional designers and apply that to their courses?
Well, that's a really good question, because, I mean, most certainly it's something that I'm interested in too. And just recently I've been polling people out there on, like, what's that one burning question you have about building an online course? Mm-hmm. And one of them is, like, how do I structure this content? Like, how do I make the modules and the lessons? Like, what do I put in there? And that is such a good question, because that is structuring. And I think that is a very key task and responsibility of instructional designers, is taking the concept of a course, mm-hmm. an idea, gathering all the content, but more so planning it. So in the end, this is the important thing. What is it you want your students to do, feel, know, or perceive at the end? Pick two or three. Mm-hmm. Those are learning outcomes. Mm-hmm. And you go backwards. I design backwards. So I figure out, okay, so this client comes to me and they have this idea and they already know what they want their students to be able to do, feel, know, or perceive mm-hmm. at the end. And I build backwards. I teach to that and no more, mm-hmm. right? So that's why my courses are very focused. So, I mean, I use the example in my own course about creating easy bite wedding cakes. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if this is even possible. So easy bake wedding cakes, you know, we've all gone to weddings and there's that big tier wedding cake and they start cutting it and it falls over and then there's crumbs everywhere. It's like the thing's a mess, right? Mm-hmm. Well, an easy bake would already be cooked into pre-made slices, right? So it'd be like little individual baking pans. And so in that particular course, it's first of all, how to select the right ingredients. So select is the verb, right? How mm-hmm. to select the right ingredients to make sort of a robust cake mm-hmm. mix. And the second one is how to bake it in these individual pans. And that's it. I'm not going to talk about the history of flour. I'm not going to talk about, you know, icing, mm-hmm. right? I'm going to teach you how to build that, right? Mm-hmm. If you want decorating course, you're over here. So it's really focused. And typically, and it's so common, and even, you know, with, you know, professional educators, it's like, oh, but I have to teach them this. I got to get that in there too. And then I want to add this content. It's so, everybody does that. Mm-hmm. And I learned that along the way when I was teaching, is pare it back. And it hurts. You're like, oh, but it's so important. I need to teach them. You're supposed to teach them what you said you're going to teach them, and just teach them that. It's okay. You know, more is not better. Right? Because you just get overwhelmed, confused, you get off on some other tangent, you don't know how this new piece of, you know, added content is connected to what I'm supposed to be doing. Because learners are vulnerable. Mm-hmm. They're coming to the course because they don't know this and they want to learn this. So they're newbies, right? They're new at this. Teach them that, right? And if you want to have more good stuff, then create an advanced course or a book, right? And if they need that, they'll go to that. But when it comes to learning something, think of them as vulnerable, and they'll get frustrated really quickly if they're not learning. They'll be dissatisfied if they're confused. Mm-hmm. So it's okay to just teach to what you said you're going to teach and get rid of the rest. It's noise and fluff, right? And mm-hmm. Or another course. Mm-hmm. And I think it's all about the structure and then adding those learning experiences like we were talking about. Well, we haven't talked about engaging learning yet, but the bite-sized exercises and give them feedback. Like, that's all they want. They want this. They want to go through this journey of learning, and the learning is very hard for adults to change their mind on stuff. Mm-hmm. Easier to teach children because they're so malleable, right? Mm-hmm. But with adults, sometimes it's going to take paradigm shifting. Like, oh, I don't believe in that, or I just can't get that. You know, my head has been geared a certain way. So you have to be gentle with them, and you have to really stay focused on what you're teaching them and get them to practice.
That's great. So it sounds like there's a bit of a tension here, I guess, or an interesting set of trade-offs to manage, which is, on the one hand, you're saying that adults are highly self-directed with their learning, and you need to respect that. But on the other hand, you're also saying that we need to have clear outcomes for them and a design that sort of helps structure and focus them toward those outcomes. I was wondering if you could kind of speak to how do you balance those two goals to give your adult learners a sense of autonomy and self-direction while also providing them a clear structure that engages them toward some learning outcomes.
That's an excellent question. So within the course, you provide choice and flexibility. So in the course, you may have two or three different resources that they could learn from, right? Whatever that particular single lesson is. Mm-hmm. When they provide their homework or whenever they try to practice, you provide them flexibility in how that's going to look instead of you must fill out this worksheet. Mm-hmm. Maybe they need to type an essay. Maybe they need to do an audio piece, you know, however they want to learn. So that's the type of flexibility. But they, and I'm really glad you pointed that out because there is a tension there. But it's, they're coming to you, a teacher, they're coming to you and they're looking at the teacher as a leader, right? They're coming to you and wanting you to teach them something. But within the course, there's should be flexibility about, and also when they show up and how they engage and all that type of, that's what I mean by flexibility. Mm-hmm. But they're still looking to learn A, B, and C. And so they're expecting that. And it has to be relevant to their life. They wouldn't even take the course if it wasn't relevant. So everything needs to be relevant as well. And so that's how you, I think, is the best way to balance it.
Mm-hmm. Great. Are there other common mistakes that you see content experts making when they're creating online programs, other things that they're perhaps missing in terms of their understanding of adult learning or effective course design?
Well, what I've noticed out there, and a lot of people are designing their courses in the same way as they've been taught online. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of... there's a little bit too much content dumping, you know, mm-hmm. there's just too much in there. Mm-hmm. And there's no connections made between the different lessons. I noticed there's a real style out there for talking videos, right? So mm-hmm. a set of slides are put up and this person basically reads from them for 30 to 60 minutes and mm-hmm. adults can read. So mm-hmm. videos need to be used a different way. So they need to mix it up a little bit. And this is they can turn to instructional designers and learn this. It's like, what type of media is best suited for what type of lessons, mm-hmm. right? For me, I think videos are best for, screen capture, showing how to do something on the computer. Mm-hmm. They're excellent for that. But that needs to be paired with an instruction sheet, a written text, so people can have something to walk away with. Mm-hmm. Coming back to a video and relearning something, it may not happen. So they need a quick cheat sheet walk away, right? Mm-hmm. Take away. And video, I think, is also great for emoting something, telling a story, trying to connect with your learners. Maybe a really brief intro so that they can see the teacher's face. That's it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Audio is great, too. Audio is good for compassion and trying to explain something that's sort of complex or intrinsic or something. You know, I think audio is really great for that. So I notice a lot of courses are like a series of videos, which is too much. It's just mm-hmm. too much, you know. It's the only way I can learn. I guess they're trying to get into that lecture style, and that's a real common trend in academia. Is the professors go, okay, well, I'm just going to take what I do in the classroom, which is just talk at them,
mm-hmm.
and stick it online.
Mm-hmm.
But because of academic freedom, universities are having a hard time convincing professors to teach in different ways. So they really need to take a look at changing it up a little bit, which helps different learning styles. And listening to 1 hour video after 1 hour video after 1 hour video is, I think, horrendous. I mean, I couldn't tolerate it, right? So
mm-hmm.
I think that's what's happening out there. And bless their hearts, they're teaching, they're trying to share their knowledge, which is great. So I'm really trying to come in now and inform about different ways that you can develop. And I just, you know, whoever's listening, just think about that. How can
mm-hmm.
how can I deliver this differently? And a series of videos is not it. And so that may hit a few sore points, but that may get them thinking like, well, how else can I deliver this lesson?
Mm-hmm.
Take a look at the lesson and go, how can I deliver this that would be really effective?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I want to leave with that. Yeah.
So just to dig into that a little bit deeper, how would you advise someone who's a content expert and they're coming in perhaps with just this expectation based on seeing other courses or just their sort of baseline knowledge that creating an online course means, you know, creating a series of videos and, you know, maybe some kind of exercises or worksheets that accompany those videos. And you're telling them to go beyond that. Can you kind of get a very specific and practical there, and you know, what would you suggest to someone who is creating an online course based on their content expertise, and they have, you know, a blog and other forms of content? What types of learning activities should they be looking at creating besides videos, for example?
Well, I think if the content expert looks at, okay, I've got this, you know, nugget, this, you know, little lesson right here,
mm-hmm.
and I want to teach them this. And at the end, this is the big question, what do I want them to do with this?
Mm-hmm.
How do I want them to internalize this? How do I want them to apply this?
Mm-hmm.
And that will inform your learning activity.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, I'm just dealing with a student right now, and she's into something that's very creative and spiritual, and part of her course is really looking at yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which personal development courses are very hard to do online. There needs to be a lot of teacher presence in that, for sure, not just a self-directed thing, because it's not going to happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, she had this one particular lesson where the people are going to draw a self-portrait
mm-hmm.
of themselves. So it's really about taking a look at how do you see yourself, right? And I don't think that lends to a one-hour video, right? It's
mm-hmm.
actually an exercise that's really, really personal. And they're going, so why not, I thought, first of all, give an example. So that would be an image or illustration. So a picture, not a picture. So the teacher would create an image of herself
mm-hmm.
and share it, right? And then she would describe what she sees. And then the exercise could be, now buddy up with somebody else in the course, because then it would be interesting to see what that buddy, how they see you. But notice how private that is,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's just you and that other student, developing your own portrait, sharing it with each other, and then having that student say, well, here's how I see you. So it's that sort of, again, shifting, but it's private, and you don't need a long video to do that. So that's the type of thing you really have to think about, those each individual lessons, what am I teaching, and what do I really want them to do with this? And that should inform what that activity is.
Great.
And that's simple. Now you don't have to create a 60-minute video, which is really time-consuming too, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the poor student doesn't have to sit through another long. So it's really asking them to do things. And then if it was a self-directed course, which I don't recommend for personal development courses, because it should be more coaching and caring and, you know, group activities and support. You know, again, I probably would do the same thing and then ask them to go ask their family. So you, when you look at this portrait of me, what do you see? Or when you look at me, what do you see? You know, so it'd be that type of activity.
Mm-hmm. So really thinking at it, again, from outside in, from the learner's perspective first, and thinking about realistically, what can they do with this, and what are they going to be producing, writing, or creating, or thinking, or doing, yeah. rather than just how much content can I provide?
Yeah, because otherwise, just put it in a book and sell it, right? Mm-hmm. Courses are meant to take people through an experience. And so you have to create that experience. And then I wouldn't do that with all the lessons, like, you know, keep telling them to go do something. Sometimes you have to get them engaged in other ways, like webinars or online discussion board or sharing something or connecting with them one-on-one or doing a quiz, you know, whatever sort of lends towards. Quizzes are great for just knowledge, right? Did mm-hmm. you get the terminology here? It's not about, do you feel better today? It's nothing like that. It's like knowledge. It's like factual stuff. Mm-hmm. Quizzes are really great for that, because when we start teaching, we also have new concepts and terminology. And those are really good to teach in the beginning. Like, did you get that? You know, like, can you match up this word with that description? And sort of, because it's really important you understand terminology and the concepts behind the terminology. So when we're teaching a new language, really, whatever we're coming into. I think people forget that too. I mean, I'm just starting to figure out what branding means. I'm thinking, because I'm from Alberta, right, where we brand the cows.
Nice.
So I'm going, what is branding? So nobody's ever explained it, right? What is branding? You know, so, you know, sometimes we really need to step back and put our feet into the shoes of the learner and unpack our expertise. It's so hard to do. I know it is, but that is teaching.
Well, I think that a great way that you've distilled that is a course is an experience. It's not just a wrapper around or a different, you know, way of presenting your content. It's an experience that you're creating, yeah. For your participant, and your goal as the expert should be to, you know, carefully walk through that experience and keep finding ways to make it better over time.
Yeah, you know, and I get, you know, we need to make money. I get that. I mean, I'm a businesswoman. I'm a shrewd businesswoman, right? Mm-hmm. I get that. But if the only reason to deliver courses to make lots of money, well, you know, I think in the end, if you have a really great course that changes people's lives and then they tell their network, I think that's a much better way to organically grow. But just, and I'm not putting down making money, obviously, but it's like, don't forget the learner and their experience. That is what a course is. If you're going to teach a course, take responsibility for that. And that's what that's sort of a message I'm trying to put out there as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, and in our experience, at least for most independent experts who have a specific kind of niche around some type of content or domain expertise, the goals are ultimately aligned. It's very unlikely that people in that position will build a giant business online around selling pure content, even if it's packaged as a self-directed course. Mm-hmm. It's much more likely that they can succeed by getting small numbers of people who really value their expertise to take these a course experience that has that personal touch and is priced accordingly. That's a more achievable and sustainable business model than to try and build a highly automated, scalable business.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I most certainly can't. It's not my place to say how people run their businesses, that's for sure. And I'm just trying to figure it out myself as well. But when it comes to teaching, I mean, it's like, if you care about your learners, it's going to come through, even though it may not be the perfect course, right? And even though you don't have somebody to create the videos for you, whatever. I mean, it's like, I think if you show up as a teacher, it will make a world of difference. And it's fun teaching people. It's wonderful to meet new people and learn about them. And adults are so much easier to teach. I actually have a teaching certificate mm-hmm. where I could teach in the high school system, but I've always taught adults, and they're so self-motivated and interested and driven. And so I find it really fun to teach adults and get to know who they are.
So So one last area where I thought that your experience as an instructional designer might be helpful to listeners is that a lot of content and domain experts, again, seem to struggle with the process and logistics of creating an online course, which is something that instructional designers kind of are able to deal with systematically. I was wondering, would you have any advice for an independent expert who has a great course idea and really loves the idea of offering a course to their audience, but is having trouble moving the course idea forward?
Well, there's two things I teach. One I just spoke about is really nail down two or three goals of what you want your learners to do at the end. Mm-hmm. And it just falls into place after that. So what are the two or three things you want them to, I always say, do, feel, perceive, or think at the end of your course? Mm-hmm. That will inform what you're going to teach in the content. Then I also talked about how to structure it. So it's lessons, and it's learning experiences in each lesson. But I also teach a concept that is not mine. It's called the big idea. And it's actually by two educational scholars called McTighe and Wiggins. Mm-hmm. And it is a concept that's used for curriculum development in the educational field. And the big idea is so you have an idea around photography. You're a photographer. You want to teach your skills, how to take great photographs. And you've got this idea. It's time to teach it. You've got lots of strategies that you can share. But you're going, everybody else teaching photography too. How can mine be different? Mm-hmm. Well, the big idea concept is like, just take that whole concept of teaching photography and wrap it into something that's just a little bit bigger and broader and more interesting, and that you yourself can bring yourself to it. So a concept would be, instead of teaching photography, teach about capturing light. Mm-hmm. Right? That's it. Teach about capturing light. That would inform all your development. So you can talk about light and dark contrast. You can talk about capturing sunlight. And within those lessons, you can talk about the f-stops, and I don't know much about photography. I'm a point-and-click person. But, every lesson can be built around this bigger concept that is so much more important and is really what photography is about. Mm-hmm. And it's very easy to say that, like, oh, go get a big idea. But I direct my students to go to TED Talks. And TED Talks are 20-minute lectures or presentations by these, thought leaders, mm-hmm. in the world. And I'm not saying take an idea and make sure it's, knock it out of the park type of idea that's going to wow everybody. No, it's about putting your course into this sort of environment, into this sort of nuance that's just this little bit more interesting, because in the end, teach what you want other people to learn. Mm-hmm. From you, teach what's in your head, like how you see your topic. And of course, when I teach, I'm always talking about the learning journey, the learning centeredness, like the learner, I'm sorry. Like, so my approach is the learner centered approach. I care about my students and everything they experience and how I design my course. Mm-hmm. That's my big idea, right? Mm-hmm. And so it informs everything when I start to design. And I think so between the big idea, two or three learning outcomes, and structuring those lessons into little nuggets of learning experiences, that will make a good course. Hmm. That's my recipe.
Great. So what the final question I always like to leave listeners with, something specific they can use to move forward on their course journey. So if you had to share sort of one action, tip, or piece of guidance or recommendation that listeners could use today to start creating more authentic and successful online courses, what would you suggest?
Well, I would suggest get out a big old piece of paper and markers or crayons or color pencils or pens or whatever you want, and start to draw your course. Put the big circle in the middle of the big idea and your topic, right? Then your goals, little line off of there with another circle, two or three goals, and then start from those goals, start drawing all your little individual lessons. Like, make it very visual, make it a map, So it becomes, that becomes your guide and your map to designing your course. And through that process, you're going to, they're going to struggle with, oh, but I want to teach this too. Well, does it fit? No. So don't, it's okay. Your learners are not going to lose out. In fact, they may lose if you put too much in, right? Mm-hmm. And so just sort of map it out and have fun with that and stay really focused. So teach what you say you're going to teach. Teach to those two or three goals and that's it. And I think that will make really nice courses. And so I guarantee if people do that, they're going to have two or three course ideas, and that's great. So the more people are learning out there and improving their lives and their businesses, the better.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Kelly. Really appreciate it. For folks who are interested in your point of view on this topic, where should they go to learn more about you and your work?
Well, my website is wiredlearningdesigns.com. And it's Dr. Kelly Edmonds.
Terrific. Well, thank you so much for sharing your experiences, your insights, your reflections with us today, and look forward to talking with you more in the future.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate it, and I appreciate being able to share my message as well.
Thanks again for listening today. You know, there's so much for authentic experts to learn from the world of instructional design. And the insights Kelly shared today are just the beginning of that exploration. So stay tuned for more interviews with other brilliant instructional designers in the future. And for now, continue to take action on these ideas. Go to authenticexpertpodcast.com to get our top takeaways from this interview, and then start applying Kelly's advice and inspiration as you explore your big ideas and continue your work as an authentic expert.